Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to our Momentum call here for March 4th. It's great to be here with you guys. Let's see who we have so far here. Leslie. Hello, Leslie. Michael. David. Welcome. All three of you. I know we have a few more who are going to be joining. Let's go ahead and get started. Hey, Eva. Welcome. We're just getting started. You haven't missed anything. All right, let me try this again. All right, guys, let's go ahead and get to it. I know a few more are going to be joining us, but we'll go ahead and get started. And you know the drill. Always love to start on a positive note. Make sure we pay attention to the good things that are happening. And hello, Peter and Patricia. Good to see you. So if you wouldn't mind going to the chat area and typing in a capital W and just letting me know about a win that you've had over the past couple of weeks. Anything good or small, certainly counts. We're looking for things that make you feel like you're getting some momentum, making some progress. Maybe you had an aha. Maybe you're finally, kind of getting a little bit of momentum. Anything along those lines counts. So just go ahead and go to the chat area. Let me know what's new and good in your world. Tell you one of the things for me, and I'll go ahead and kick us off, is I was able to take 2 weeks ago, I was able to take the week off to be with my kids. They had their winter break, and we flew down to Puerto Rico to see my dad and a big part of my family down there. I was able to just kind of disengage from work, just spent about an hour a day on email and just doing very, very basic work. And then last week also took a couple of days off. Take my little one to Disney. He had never been. He's 9 years old, just had his birthday and his present. We took him to Disney and Universal. And same thing, we're able to go down there, disengage, and just be present, just have a really good time. So that's certainly a win for me. Good, we got a few here. Patricia says, gave a prospect a proposal, and while she hasn't signed up yet, she did say she was intending to do the work after a meeting with a website designer. Awesome. Fingers crossed for you, Patricia. Good stuff. Eva says, I've started working on two big clients for ongoing work that have at least 3 month contracts. I saw that. That's fantastic, Eva. This is great. She says, I've been asked to write a few small articles along with that from other clients. And today had an inbound request for a pitch deck. I can't do it till Monday, which doesn't work for them, but I was happy with the inbound. Inbound is always great, isn't it? Michael says, three responses to my first warm email. Warm emails. It's great. One said no outside writers now. One said just hired a copywriter and check back in a month. And one asked if interested in part-time job if I live in Seattle. I live in LA, but still something. Absolutely. That's so motivating when you get positive responses. Although all those are, I would consider positive responses. And, Michael, when you get the, oh, we're working with a writer right now, or we just started working with somebody, always treat it as a good thing because it tells you that they do hire outside writers. And then position yourself as number two, the backup. Say, great. Would you mind keeping my information handy in case anything comes up? No one is permanent. That writer could not work out, or maybe they end up taking a full-time job, or they get too busy with other clients. You always want to position yourself as a backup in case something happens. And of course, nurture them until they are ready, but don't automatically assume, oh, this is never going to happen. I'm not saying you are, but just a quick little tip there. Peter says, made two new connections in LinkedIn who showed interest and asked me to send over my details. Excellent. Leslie says, I'm working on a proposal for a large construction firm in Madison. We'll reverse engineer a proposal and offer suggestions. I'm getting clarification now, so I'm on the same page with the client contact. Excellent. Good stuff, Leslie. David says, I've been hitting my new daily, weekly monetary goals for the last month, and I booked a last minute trip to go back to Colombia to get some much needed hiking time in. I'll still be working, but not nearly as much. Oh, that sounds lovely. Hiking in Colombia. Awesome. Good. All right. Good stuff, guys. Hey, while I got you, real quick, if you also wouldn't mind letting me know what your focus is right now in terms of our work together. So in terms of your work in the Accelerator program, what's your current focus right now? This is a really good way to not just see what everybody's working on, what they're currently focused on, but also just as a bit of a prompt to make sure that, and a reminder to always be working on something. It doesn't have to be, you know, kind of like really active work, but it could just be, hey, I'm practicing this, or I'm thinking about this, or I'm currently going through this training, or I'm developing this habit. It's always important just to check in and make sure that you are working on something, because it's very easy to let the stuff kind of slip by. Next thing you know, 3 months have gone by and you really haven't done much in terms of our work together. So Eva, working with LinkedIn 321 and always using and refining the capacity planner. Great. David, productizing services, goal is to finish a training this week. Excellent. Michael is formula prospecting in LinkedIn 321, 30 emails out so far, but only one day of LinkedIn 321. That's okay. Good. Awesome. All right, guys. Well, let's get to, Patricia says, I need to get going on my warm emails, but I have a question. I usually get my work through marketing companies, so I don't have direct contact. All right, we can definitely talk about that, Patricia. And Leslie says, focus right now is optimizing my time using your daily scheduler. Excellent. Good stuff. All right, let's get to questions. And just a reminder, it's pretty straightforward. The ground rules are basically, look, keep your question focused and specific. If it's too broad, it's okay. I'll just ask you to narrow it down, and we can drill down on something that's going to be the most useful. One question per person, that way I can get to everybody as quickly as possible, but we always have time for more. So if you got more than one, that's fine. Just hold on to it and ask it in the second round. We usually go through a couple of rounds at least. And of course, if you're considering a couple of different options, if it's kind of a, you know, should I do A or B, let me know that. That way I don't go down a rabbit hole. While I'm waiting for questions, and by the way, if you have a question or something you like to talk about, you don't have to type in the whole question. Just give me an idea of what you've got. I'll unmute you and we'll have a conversation. But please put a capital Q in front of it so I know that it's a question you've got. All right, and I don't mistake it for something else. All right, we got an open floor right now. I was just checking to see if there were any pre-submitted questions. I don't see any. And let me make sure that I got my iPad ready here to share with you guys if we need to jot something down or draw something. All right, good stuff. Patricia, I'm not gonna put you on the spot, but just FYI, if you want to talk about that, just let me know, put in a queue in the chat area. Your comment earlier about warm emails when you don't have a direct contact. Happy to discuss that with you. Okay, Patricia says, yes, please. All right, let's bring you in. Hey, Patricia, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing well, good to talk to you.
Good, thank you.
So tell me about, you're saying that you usually get your work through marketing companies, so you don't have a direct contact. So tell me more about that. I want to make sure I don't misunderstand what you're talking about.
So a lot of times my clients are the marketing people that do everything. So they do the social media, they do analytics, they do all this stuff. And so they have the contact with the client and they just subcontract me for the writing. So I've done some blogs for accounting companies and that kind of thing, And I'd love to reach out to them again because I know who they are, but because my work came through the marketing company, I don't want to burn a bridge or make somebody upset by going to the accounting company and saying, hey, I was the writer that did those. And if you found them useful, then, you know, I'd love to work with you again. So I don't know how to approach them without making the marketing people who still give me work annoyed or feel like they're being cut out.
Gotcha. All right. So just to be clear, your client is an agency.
Yeah.
What you just described, right? And you're working for the agency doing work for their client.
But yes.
The agency is your client.
Yes.
All right. So a couple of things. Yeah. So what's happening here is the client outsourced that work to the agency outsourced that work to you.
Yeah.
Two things. First is you never want to go around the agency and contact a client directly.
Yeah.
You know, because that is, you know, from an ethical
exactly.
standpoint, not cool. Even if you don't, people have asked me, well, what if I don't have a non-compete or I don't have a contract with them? It's still just it's not a good business practice, you know? So you don't want to contact the client directly. Now, there are situations where let's say that you don't want to work for the agency anymore, but you know that it might make sense for you to reach out to some of their clients directly. For whatever reason, and I can give you a couple of examples if you want, but in that case, always ask the client first, listen, would you mind if I contacted, you know, Susie at ABC Company to see if they might be interested in working with me directly? Always get their blessing.
Yeah.
But that's in situations where, let's say the agency lost the client or they fired the client or they don't really like doing that work for them. And, you know, they're just doing it for whatever reason. They've expressed that to you and you've decided to move on from working directly with that client. And now you want to reach out to the client directly,
mm-hmm.
right? Things like that. But otherwise you definitely, you know, you don't want to breach that, that trust. Now in terms of, all right, let's talk now outside of the situation, warm email prospecting, the definition is you're going after prospects who don't know who you are. So I want to make sure that that's clear. Okay, so yeah. It wouldn't be this scenario. It would be cold prospects. Then you just look for a marketing director if it's a company. Or if it's going to be an agency, look for the creative director or one of the principals. And that's who you reach out to. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So with warm email prospecting, it's not about staying in touch. That's a totally different dynamic. It's just about knocking on a door that, you know, where they don't know you.
Yeah. And that's that. Because the majority of my clients have been the marketing agencies, I'm finding the warm email marketing difficult just because I don't really have that many people on my list. So I did actually.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay. I reached out to
one. By the way, you don't want to have a list. I know that's counterintuitive, but I can get into that. You want to do it one by one.
Yeah.
So if you know you're going to, okay, if you want to go after more agencies, then look up agencies who are doing work in your target market. Or, you know, so what, remind me again, what's your target market?
It's usually females, businesses led by female entrepreneurs. So just small business with female.
Okay. So like women-owned businesses, right?
Yes.
Then look for, you know, there's a few places you can go for that. You could do a little bit of digging, do a little bit of research. There's all kinds of publications for women-owned businesses. And they featured, you know, ABC Company and XYZ and about 20 others, you know, in this profile piece they did. Or maybe, you know, like 25 women-owned businesses to watch in 2020. whatever, right? So you look for compiled lists, and then what you do, right, this is the list, you just start at the top or wherever. You could start at number five.
Yeah.
And you look them up on LinkedIn first, and you want to look for a marketing director at that company. Now you have a name, then look, research their email address, and then look to see what they're doing, you know, and point out something that you found interesting, impressive, that you feel they're doing well, and then use that to personalize your email. So the reason you want to do these one at a time is if you compile a list, it could take you weeks or months. And by the time you have, let's say you get 22 people on that list, by the time you're ready, you've forgotten why they're there. So you have to go one by one.
That's true.
And look at them again in order to personalize your warm email.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, as you're finding them, it's top of mind for you. You're already thinking of some ideas of things you could say in your email. Man, don't waste that. Let's go ahead and draft that email and get it out the door.
Yes. And can I ask a follow-on question?
Yeah.
So I did the, it was kind of a combination of warm email / 9-word email.
Okay.
I've been sort of pursuing this financial planner for about a year, and we've kind of gone back and forth. And I just sent her a, hey, were you thinking about doing that marketing plan? And she said, she said yes, but in June, July, whatever. And then she came back to me a couple of weeks later and said that she wanted to do something. She wanted to brainstorm because she felt like she was being passed over in the company because she wasn't assertive and she wasn't a man and she wasn't a this, that, and the other thing. So we met, and I was brainstorming, and as I was giving her these ideas, I'm like, I should be charging you for these things. I just, I don't know how to kind of, now that I've sort of, yes, I want to get your business, and now I'm giving her information, but I'm not charging her. So I don't really know how to pull back now and say, you know, remember that marketing plan I gave you? This is part of it. And you should be paying for it.
Yeah, gotcha. Tell me again, what does she do again? What's her profession?
She's a financial planner.
Okay, perfect. So here's what you need to do. The time to draw that boundary is now. It's like, don't wait because you think, oh, it's too late. I've already opened up that door. That boundary is gone. No, it's never too late. And right now is a perfect time to say, you know the nuances of the situation, but you need to communicate something to the effect of, hey, you know, when we sat and I, you know, we had that brainstorming session, that strategy chat, you know, that's on the house. That's however you want to communicate that. That's on me. That would be, however, part of what we would work on as part of the strategy. You want to make it sound like, look, you know, the strategy is like this, and you know what we talked about was this. There's more to it. That's the tip of the iceberg, right?
Yeah.
So you know, based on our conversation, it sounds like there's a lot there. And I, you know, I saw this opportunity, this opportunity, this opportunity. I'd love to work with you to put a plan together for, you know, accomplishing X. You know. And then cap it with a question, like any classic 9-word email. You know, would it make sense to re-engage on this? Or, you know, do you want to get started on that? I would actually use the latter. Do you know, are you ready to get started on that? Don't go too soft. Yeah, but absolutely. So that's the first thing. How do you salvage the situation? Create that boundary now. Let her know that this is part of, you know, this thing we'd already talked about. It's just the tip of the iceberg. So she doesn't feel like, well, I already got everything I needed. No.
Kind of, yeah.
There's, right? There's still like all this other stuff in here.
Yeah.
And then for future reference, this is not something we've talked much about in this program because it's a bit more of an advanced strategy, but you guys should be starting to think about it now because many of you guys have really progressed in terms of your business growth over the past few months, which is treat those things as a planning engagement, like a strategy slash planning engagement. So rather than, here's the classic scenario. You get a client or a prospect call you to set an appointment, either a call or an in-person appointment to pick your brain and brainstorm ideas, whatever the language they use. And you agree to it for a couple of reasons. You and or the client believe, mistakenly, that the only thing you really get paid for is cranking out deliverables, mm-hmm. right? So you're thinking and they're thinking that, okay, we'll have this call or this meeting. And the incentive there for me as the writer is, you know, I'll give them some ideas, we'll talk through it. And at the end, we'll be closer to getting a deliverable defined. And that's where I get paid, right? I know I ran my business like that for years. That's a mistake. That's a mistake because the moment anything outside of the writing is just kind of like open and free, then you've just opened up again. It's a boundary issue. You've removed that boundary. And now it's, they can take advantage of it. Number one, number two, they don't value it as much. Mm-hmm. And then number three, they don't value you and your expertise as much. So you always want to say, hey, that'd be great. So I do this thing. I call it a road mapping session, or I like the term road mapping, but you can call it a planning and strategy session. Where we, and you productize it. You basically, like you create parameters and you describe, you know, this is what it includes, scope of work. We sit down and we do this. Then I do an audit to look at these things. And then I provide you with very specific recommendations and a plan of action. This is something at the end that you'll be able to take and you'll be able to deploy on your own, work with somebody else, or you can hire me to do those things. But what it will give you is clarity. It will give you a solid plan based on your real situation and what's going to work to solve those problems. Does that make sense?
Excellent. Yes, it does.
So, and that removes the, and by the way, you know, the objective of that is not necessarily to get to turn every one of these prospects into clients, or to turn clients into these paid engagements. Many times the objective is to avoid this problem of clients who want to pick your brain. You charge for it. The mistake a lot of people have, some writers have it right in that they charge for it, but they get into the mistake of, you know, hourly. Well, I charge for that, you know, $100 an hour or so. If we're going to meet for an hour, it's $100. You know, $100 is really not enough to make it worth your while, number one. Number two, now it devalues you because you're selling your time, not your expertise. Mm-hmm. So bottom line is with this client, we just talked about how to fix it. But in the future, that's how I would approach these situations. Is
perfect. Yeah.
Right? Good?
Yes. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You are welcome. All right, let's see. All right. Leslie has a question here. She says, I was notified through LinkedIn about a full-time job as editor of an engineering blog in related materials. I don't want a full-time job. I could notify them that I'm available as a freelancer. Yeah, perfect. Great question. Let me bring you in. Hey, Leslie.
Hey there.
Hello.
It's one of those things where I looked at it like, well, if it was years ago, I might have wanted to do this. But, you know, I mean, I haven't been offered the job or anything, but I certainly feel well qualified for it. But it's just like, you know, yeah. At first I thought, oh, yeah, maybe I should, you know, apply for this. And then I, you know, came to my senses and said, no, you don't want to do that, you know.
Yeah.
But then it's like, well, how can I leverage this? Say, hey, I'm available, you know, on a project basis, or, you know, I know they're looking for, it's an online position, you know, and they're looking for a, you know, full-time editor and thing, but so do I just drop it? Do I say, hey, I'm qualified, you know, you could hire me on a project basis, or just any insights you might have?
Well, I think the first question, I just want to make sure this is clear, is, you know, does this sound interesting? Does this sound like work you would want to do? And is it in my target market? You know, would I be would I be a good fit for it, right? So that's assume, but I need to make sure that you're asking yourself that.
You know, I'm the architecture, engineering, construction, and it's for writing, you know, blogs for engineering topics and industry topics. So it is in my area.
Gotcha. And then the thing, the other would, you know, does this sound interesting? Because I'm not just because it's in your area doesn't mean that, you know, you have to go for it.
Right. Well, yeah. And I don't, you know, I don't want to apply for the job, but I'm just wondering.
No, I know. I just, I know it sounds silly, but many times I think we're kind of in the mode of business development and prospecting, and like we don't stop to think about, well, wait a minute, does this sound like something I would even want to even look into? So here's what typically happens. The answer is if the answer is yes to those questions, the employer is here, and they need to be on the other side, right? When they hire somebody, there's going to be a gap, because we know that they have to, first of all, they have to find the right person. So they have to do the search, they have to shortlist, they have to interview, they have to hire them. What do they have to do? They have to train and onboard them, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if this is like, you know, where they want that person to be ultimately, and this is where they are now, so this is future and this is today, there's a gap in there. And this could be, we know this could be anywhere between 3 and 6 months. But guess what? The work still needs to be done in the meantime. So the approach that I've seen work best in these situations, and it's not perfect, but it's the one that's got the most hope, is to say, I saw X advertise,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm not looking for a full-time position. I have a business where I do this. I know how difficult it is to find, train, and onboard the right person. I know that can take a lot of time. Would you be interested in working with someone as a stopgap?
Okay.
Essentially, you know, building that bridge until that person is where they need to be. Because I understand, Mr. Prospect, Mrs. Prospect, that the work doesn't stop. You know, while you're doing all this, you still got this machine to run. And, you know, I can provide temporary relief there. Was that something? And here are my qualifications. I mean, this is not the language. I'm just saying these are the components that need to be in that message, right?
Yeah.
I feel, you know, based on what you shared here, I feel I'm a, you know, an ideal fit for this. So what you're doing is you're not doing what I've seen some people do. It's like, don't hire a full-time person. You can save money by hiring a freelancer. That's the wrong approach. You also don't want to go the other way and say, well, I'm a freelancer. Would you consider hiring a freelancer? And you want to build a case for it. And you say, well, hadn't they thought of this? You'd be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of businesses just default to one thing. They also have so many other things to think about that they hadn't really thought about that. They just automatically think of one way to solve a problem, and they hadn't thought about this potential solution. It's a more creative solution that takes care of short-term needs.
Okay, well, I'll propose that. They had a very detailed summary of you would do this the first, you know, first week, first 3 months, all that. I think I'll just say that I could, you know, be a stopgap measure. I mean, I don't want to work full time for them for 3 to 6 months, but I could provide some services. Does that too negative?
Yeah, I mean, you never know. I mean, the thing you got to remember is, what's your risk? I mean, you risk nothing, right?
Yeah. And I could perhaps help them out. Okay, well, that sounds good. I just had to kind of laugh at myself. It was like, oh man, this sounds interesting. But then I was like, Leslie, stop. You don't really want to do that.
No, definitely not. I mean, if it's not what you want to, I mean, some people do. I've seen plenty of freelancers decide that, you know what, I'm going to go back to full-time employment for
that's
whatever.
That's not where I'm at this stage of the game. So.
Yeah. One last thing, and this goes without saying, it's I would only pursue these things when I'm very interested. So I know I talked earlier about, you know, is this something that you want to do? Because anything else, I feel, because it's so temporary, that I would only pursue it if I feel like I'm a great fit and I'm very interested. If I meet both of those, I just can't emphasize that enough. Then I would go for it.
Okay.
Okay.
And yeah, I mean, I could talk to them and I could see that I'm not, you know, it's not what I want, you know, anyway, thank you. That helps me with some questions to ask myself and pursue it a little bit.
Okay, good. Good luck. Let us know how it goes. I'd be curious.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome. All right, David has a question here. And David, I'll bring you in, I'll read what you share. Let's see, during the qualifying process with a new client, how quickly should you jump into the question of budget? In your training, the client's budget comes into the conversation down the line, which is completely understandable. You don't want to come off as desperate or money hungry. With that said, I've had a few prospects asked to speak on the phone multiple times. They say they're on board, they're excited, and then I provide my price proposal, and I either don't hear anything or the client jumps into saying they are on a budget. I'd really like to provide that time to current clients or better prospects. Is there an appropriate time to get into the budget question sooner so that I'm not wasting time? I know one way to do that is in the intake form on the website, and I plan on updating that soon. But as far as email/phone, is there a better time to bring up budget? Okay, yeah, let's talk about that. It's a good question, David. Hey, David, how are you?
Good, Ed. How you doing, buddy?
Good. Good. So let me clarify. You're saying you are bringing it up, but because it's later in the conversation, you're trying to figure out, okay, how can I do it sooner? Because if some of these aren't going to be a fit at all, then I'd rather know that sooner than later.
Absolutely. And I've had a few people who they immediately ask for a price proposal before giving me any kind of sense of deliverables. And I, you know, politely explain to them, look, I can't give you an exact price point because I don't know what project you want me to work on yet. You haven't told me anything you're expecting. I don't know how much research is going into this. I don't know, you know, the milestones, the due dates, etc. And then I'll give them something of a very, very broad price point within, you know, either a few, you know, a couple $1,000, for example, and they don't bat an eye at it. So I think, okay, this is great. I told them a pretty broad price point. They didn't seem fazed by it. And then we'll go through almost, you know, there's a little bit of overlap with Patricia's question, actually, with we'll kind of go into a little bit of brainstorming, how I can help them, how I can bring up their business to where it needs to be, what they want to focus on, et cetera. And so these calls can take anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes on average. And 15 minutes, not a problem at all. But then once you start getting up into multiple calls at 30 minutes apiece, they're digging into time that could be better spent on someone else. So we go through all this. They sound like they're on board. And I've had a few people who have, we've gotten to the very end. I've sent them over an official and formal project/price proposal. And it's at that point, they're like, oh, well, this actually isn't in the budget right now, or I just don't hear anything back from them at all.
Mm-hmm. And when you send that to them, meaning like you email that to them, right?
Correct. Yeah. And what I'll do is usually once I have them on the phone, again, I'll kind of roll through my process on what to expect, what I'll be delivering to them as far as the project proposal and the price proposal. And again, they're excited to get it. They just seem so into it. And then I've had more people just say, nope, this isn't in my budget right now, despite saying initially it was in the budget. And I've had one or two people just not respond back to the initial email.
Gotcha. All right. So have you, for those who said initially that it was, you know, like that you knew that they were qualified for budget, and then later said, well, this is not in our budget, did you ever go back and said, well, you know, when we initially talked about this and I gave you a range, you said that that was within your budget. You know, has anything changed?
Never with those exact words, but I always make it as formal as I can and just say, okay, well, you know, according to our initial discussion, I had given you something of a broad price proposal, and this is within those means. And that's when they kind of say, yeah, well, it always seems like they're kind of looking for something else to say. For example, oh, well, yeah, maybe I miscalculated my budget or something along those lines.
Okay.
So it's, I feel like by that point, if they're already backpedaling and I try to add more value, I'm at a weird situation where I don't want to spend more time trying to convince someone who I'm not going to convince. Cause you know, like in your training, you say it's okay. Not everyone's going to be a prospect and that's okay. But I would rather get these people. There's no perfect system obviously, but I wonder if there's a way to kind of sniff out these people a little faster instead of wasting 2 hours of talk time, you know, time typing up a project proposal, getting to that point, and then just having them ghost me or just say, you know what, we changed our mind.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. So here, what I'm hearing is your biggest concern is really a time issue. And I get it, nothing wrong with that. I think you're thinking about it the right way because, you know, each of these calls on average is about 30 minutes. By the way, that's about right. One way you can get away from getting into 45 minutes is you can set that expectation first using your scheduling tool, you know, having these be 30-minute calls, letting them know it's, you know, 30 minutes, up to 30 minutes and so forth, as opposed to being really open-ended. But anyway, that's not really your question. It's still average of 30 minutes. I get it. If you're going to do four of these a month, and you're not closing any of them, or maybe you're closing one, man, that's like 2 hours of your time. I know you're pressed for time already. The way to do it is something you mentioned. Well, there's two ways. One is to add a pre-qual step to this, where basically before you even schedule that discovery call, there's a form, and then you ask for certain key things. Definitely the need, right? And at least the need in the budget. So, you know, ask just the bare essentials, but the budget needs to be one of them. Okay. And if they passed, then they go to a discovery call. If you feel that they would be a good candidate based on what they shared. By the way, the money thing, especially if it's a drop-down list, start at a certain number. So let's say 500 to 1,000, 1,000 to 2,000, et cetera, as opposed to what many people do is, you know, 0 to 500. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely, yeah.
You're letting them know right off the bat, look, at the bare minimum, it's, you know, I don't do anything for less than that. So then a discovery call. So first of all, you're with me so far, right? This is drawing kind of a line right here that enables you to screen those who just aren't giving you much. You could just tell by their answers, look, this person is just shopping around. That kind of thing. One of the answers, by the way, that can give you some great insights is, how did you find out about me? You know, that's the first thing I have you guys ask prospects.
Okay.
That could be very telling, because many times people will tell you more than what you ask there. Oh, we're shopping around, or we're looking for writers. I found you on Google. I'm just searching. Like that kind of language, you know that's probably not going to be a good situation.
Gotcha. Yeah, absolutely.
Right, so you draw that wall here, and what that will do is it would look at it this way. It's like a funnel. Like you're gonna end up with a smaller group here, as opposed to this bigger group here. Okay, and then on the discovery call, the other piece of advice I would give you is it's very precise language when you talk money. you know, what, and you might be asking this already, but I just, this is really important. What budget are you working with? Right? What kind of budget are you working with? And then just silence, let them talk. And if they throw that hot potato back at you, well, we don't know, you know, will you tell us, what do you think this would cost? Then be ready with a range. But then you throw the hot potato back at them. Is that within your budget? And then again, shut up, don't say anything else. That language needs to be exactly as I just said it here. It's precise, and you don't fall into the trap of qualifying it. Don't keep talking. Don't explain why it's between this and that. Don't get into how you work. Shut up and listen. And then you'll know. You'll know. And you need to, you can go a little bit deeper with it. In fact, I'll give you one more here now that I think about it. This is something I've been trying more recently that I haven't taught you guys.
Okay.
But this I use when I'm feeling like they're, you know, the money thing is kind of like, you know, you asked them, they didn't tell you, you then gave them a range, and you can feel the tension. Right. And now you're talking about next steps. Well, I'm going to put together this. Here's what's next. I'm going to send it to you by then. When can I follow up with you? Right. Those steps from the training.
Right.
And then here's the new part that I was talking about. You add this. I'm just curious, before we disengage, before we hang up, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you say you fall right now? I know I haven't given you, you know, an exact number. I know I'm going to, you know, send that to you tomorrow. But I'm just curious, with 1 being there's no way, and 10 being where do I sign? Can you give me an idea of how you're feeling about it? And that's a very real good question. It's been very effective for me recently, because people that I thought were like a 9 suddenly came back with a 5 or a 6 and vice versa. And some people were kind of where I thought they would be. But what it enables you to do is, once they respond, you can now follow that up with something to the effect. Let's say they give you a 5. Then you can say, hey, I respect that. I'm curious, what do you think it would take for this to be a 9, an 8 or a 9? And then let's see what they say. And then what that does is an indirect way of pinpointing what's really troubling them. And then you can address it. And not, again, like you said, David, you're very perceptive. It's not that you're trying to convince them. You're just trying to make sure maybe they're not seeing something, or maybe you didn't explain something well. Maybe they don't understand what's involved here. And at that point, you can address it. But if you leave and it was only a money discussion there at the end, and you kind of like just left it, and you just pray that when you send them the quote, maybe that will convince them, then you're going to run into a lot of what you've been seeing.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I want to avoid, is just, I don't want to come off as this, you know, miser where I'm just going after their money, but I also want to make sure that they're just being realistic with themselves and with me, and not, you know, coming into, because the big thing right now is like, a lot of the, and I'm sure everyone on this call can speak to this, including yourself, is, you know, this idea that people want to hire a writer, and they say, well, you know, I was on Upwork, or I was on Fiverr, and they only charge $5 or $10 for a 2,000 word article. And then you have to, not that you have to justify your work, but there, I feel like a lot of these people kind of have that in the back of the head, even though they don't say it, that they won't ever bring it up. Mm-hmm. I feel like when you provide them with a price point, and even after you've gone through the benefit you can provide to their website and how, you know, you can improve X, Y, and Z, I feel like that there's just a difference between the people who are going to always be thinking, well, I can hire a guy from India to do it, or the people who know, look, every dollar I spend on this writer is going to be coming back to me tenfold. It's tougher to get to know who's who, and because I love that question, by the way. The I'm just curious, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm definitely gonna start using that from now on, because I feel like there have been tens that have, and I'd say three of the three people I'm talking about right now with this question, I thought they were tens, all of them. And then come to find out they were ones or twos the whole time. And I don't know, you know, I'm trying to improve to get around that to make sure I don't fall into that same pitfall again. So.
Yeah, I find that question, I have some theories as to why it works, but people almost always are very honest with it. I haven't had, and here's the thing, like, you know, if it's a 4, 5, or 6 or even 7, that they're waffling.
Right.
But that's fine. That's still honesty. When you get an extreme low or an extreme high, those are clear. It's really when they're in the middle that you need to say, I'm curious, what would it take to get to this level? It gives you an opportunity. So that's one thing. The second thing I would say is, listen, as you start working with better and better prospects, you're not going to get people who have that in the back of their mind, because for a number of reasons. One is they've been burned before. Okay. They know that there's a difference. Number two, they're not really interested in that. They're talking with you for a reason. And if you've pre-qualified them, like we've talked about here, then you'll know, or you'll get some clues, or you can read between the line as to why they're contacting you.
Okay.
Language to the effect of, I really like the fact that you focus on this, or I really like the fact that you have this experience, or I really like the fact that you mentioned this on your website. Those are all really good signs that this is not a person who's comparing you to Upwork freelancers.
Okay. Yeah. And I'll definitely be planning on updating the website to have a new intake form, but kind of a silly thing I didn't realize is I can just follow up with a list of questions when they initially email me to begin with. So that's something I'm going to put into effect this week.
Yeah, absolutely. The pre-qual form doesn't have to be a form, by the way. I mean, I have it as a form here, but it could be you qualify them, pre-qualify them over email.
Okay.
I would say, just to, you know, give you more specifics, this is for everybody. You know, definitely, what's their need? What are they looking for? Let me add another one, because I, you know, it can tell you a lot. What's their timing? Source. And on a, for the money, that's better on the form than on email, I find. So if you're going to use the form, definitely include the budget. With the email, I prefer leaving that to the conversation. But, I mean, it's up to you. Try it out. The reason I don't like to ask all this in the email is it doesn't really create an incentive to then do a discovery call. You know what I'm saying? Because if you've given them everything, then – because they're going to expect you to if they don't want to answer the money question, then they throw it back at you. Now they expect this to continue over email. And it's a little awkward to say, oh, okay, well, I can't tell you that. We're going to have to set up a call.
Okay.
Yeah. So as opposed to, great, curious how you found out about me, and what are you looking for specifically? And then you can go from there. So it's up to you, form versus doing it through email. But definitely do that. I think that's going to save you time. You're going to have fewer prospects to talk with, but that's exactly the objective you want. In a way, think about this, you're gaming the system. If you have fewer prospects to talk with, that means they're better quality, which means your close ratio is going to go up.
Right. And that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Perfect. Did this help?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you very much.
You bet. All right. Eva has a question here. Minimum amount of marketing I can have going out while I'm busy. I have good intentions each week to keep up with my daily LinkedIn 321, but usually only get one session done a week. I do have 4 network meetings I attend a month. It's opening doors. I'm booked for 6 hours a day on very loose deadline schedule until April 5th. It may stretch as most of the work is collaborative. I was thinking of ramping up LinkedIn the last 2 weeks of March, see what happens. I'm 80% sure those 2 clients will keep me past April. Another one might also keep me for the next 3 months. Too many irons. I need to prioritize my fire. Yeah, let's talk about that, Eva. Hello, Eva.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good. I knew you kind of predicted this, and I knew you would know, so now help me with the other part of it.
Well, listen, it's I like the 10% rule in terms of, because it gives me clarity, and it gives me 10% is such a powerful number. Sure. It gives me something to aim for. Okay. So if I work 40 hours a week on average, then that means that, you know, 4 should be spent on marketing. Now, that could be any kind of marketing. Like, you go to networking meetings, I would count that. I wouldn't count, like, well, you could count travel time if you want. It's up to you. But
yeah, no, sure.
10% is a good rule of thumb throughout. What that does is, by using percentages, you can adjust up or down based on, you know, the time of year. The kids are home during the summer, you know, that makes it harder. So you don't work as many hours. You can still keep the 10% though, you know, or you should try.
Sure.
Now, I think the biggest thing is how you use that 10%. So if you're doing networking and that's working, I'm all about keep doing what's working. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like, you know, LinkedIn 3-2-1 and some other things need to fit in there, I would say that as you get book solid, Eva and everybody, you guys need to shift to more indirect strategy. So in other words, don't do warm email prospecting. Mm-hmm. Do more LinkedIn 3-2-1 instead, because that's an inbound strategy, right? That's an attraction strategy.
Right.
You're not looking for work. You're just connecting with people, sharing and commenting.
Mm-hmm.
And if they then the other strategy that you shift to, so LinkedIn 3-2-1, and then nurturing not yet ready prospects.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
And I have let that drop a little bit as well. So
when your book's solid is the perfect time. Two reasons. First, if somebody responds, oh my gosh, thank you for following up. You know, now that I think about it, I think we could use you for this thing we're about to launch. If you respond with, wow, that's great, that sounds really interesting. You know, unfortunately, I'm book solid for most of April. What's your timing? It's not going to be awkward. It would be awkward if you said, can I help you with some of your marketing? And then they said yes, and you said, well, I'm actually really busy.
Yeah.
But if you're just touching base and it's not about looking for work and they reach out to you, that's them reaching out to you.
Sure. And I'm sure same that's thing with a LinkedIn 3-2-1. Disarming as well. So.
It is. And you know what? Yeah. It gives you an excuse to do something that you normally, let's face it, we normally don't do regularly because we're busy knocking on doors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more effective. Like, believe me, people pick up on when you're nurturing and you're desperate, people pick up on it. But when you're nurturing and you're book solid, you do it better, you're more confident. And then when people do respond, you can respond like I just described in a more confident way.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is it makes you even more attractive to some prospects. Wow, you're booked through the rest of April. That's awesome. She must be good.
Mm-hmm.
LinkedIn 3-2-1 is the same thing. You're not looking for work. So if you shift most of that 10% to the networking and then a little bit of 3-2-1 and nurturing, that's perfect. Mm-hmm. None of those strategies requires you to say, hey, can I help you with something?
Right, true. Which I mean, that doesn't bother me, obviously, but it would bother me if all of a sudden they're like, yeah, we want to hire you for a 3-month thing tomorrow. I can't do it. And that would feel horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, how do you think that 10% rule on a weekly basis, is it doable?
I think so. I mean, again, I just have to look at my, I just have to try to plan around my networking. I'm doing a lot of networking lately, and it's all good, and it's, you know, it's moving. It's just, I need to put some effort back into the other things, and I know that, so just got to do it, and then they'll get there.
Well, you know, I would say, look, if you need to, it might be too much to wedge in there in that 10% slot. If it is, the number one rule is to start with what's been working.
Sure.
And I know networking has been very effective for you. So put that in first. Then look and see what's left. And then pick one other thing. And then forget about the third one for now.
Sure.
You know, don't feel like you have to have three things in there.
Okay.
Just do your best. It's really more about following the 10% than diversifying within that 10%. And listen, Eva, if you look at everything and you say, you know, I get it, but right now it's going to be more along the lines of 5%. Mm-hmm. Do 5%. I'd rather you do 5% than say, than take an all or nothing approach and say, well, if I can't be 10%, I guess I'll just won't do it.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's, I mean, with LinkedIn and with Nurture, I mean, I've been doing my follow-up, so that's been okay because they're not drastic and it's only a few a day. So it's not a big deal, but I have just completely stopped doing anything on LinkedIn outbound wise for myself other than people connecting with me. Just because I've been so busy. So I haven't been doing my messages and my comments and, you know, the things that I normally do. And that brought in people too. So that's where I'm like, okay, I got to do something else. Cause you know, I mean, I just don't know. I don't know if these people are going to keep me for the rest of the year. I have no idea. I'm hoping, but you know, you just never know how that's going to go. So I've got to start something else on top of networking. Cause it's good. It's fun. It works, but it's slow. Whereas LinkedIn, I've been able to make go a lot faster, which is nice. So I have been doing an all or nothing in that with that. And I should at least get a 5% something down so I can do something a day. Just, I don't feel like I'm behind.
It's, you want to maintain the habit. So this is the equivalent of, you know, I got a very busy week, so I can't go to the gym.
Right.
Okay. That's because it's 10 minutes driving there, 45 mm-hmm. minutes there, and then 10 minutes back. So what is that? It's over an hour. Right. Yeah, you're right. You're pressed for time. Can you do 10 push-ups, a few pull-ups? Can you run up and down the stairs?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. That's going to take me 10 minutes. Okay, do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
At least you can check that off.
Right.
And continue your streak.
True.
Focus on the streak and obsess about the streak more than anything else. And I think you're going to do fine because the streak maintains the habit and keeps that pipeline healthy. And then keeps you from the feast or famine cycle.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You are welcome. All right. Patricia has a question. She says, I'm curious if anyone has had feedback or backlash on asking for a budget in an intake form on their website. Ah, good question. So everyone feel free to chime in there in the chat area if you've had feedback or backlash. And I'm going to unmute you. Patricia, because I'm curious about what you mean by feedback. Okay, so let me see here. Hey, you're unmuted. So what do you mean by, I know backlash, but feedback in what way?
Well, I just, on one of the trainings, you were looking at contact forms, and the woman, she started at $3,000 or something like that. And obviously, things that I do, most of them aren't $3,000. But I've done my website draft and I've sent it out to different people and they just said, you know, do you think that people will either drop off if they see that if you put a minimum of $1,000 or whatever, and they think that that's either too expensive or something like David was talking about, you know, that, or, they just, yeah, basically that either it's too expensive or they don't know yet, or there's too many questions and they're getting to feel overwhelmed. And so they ditch. That's kind of.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that's a great question. A couple of things that come to mind is, you know, you don't have to start at 3,000. I'm not, you know, the number is really, don't feel that you have to copy that. The example I gave, David, what was it, starting at 500. But so just use something. That the point is to not put zero. You know, don't start at zero. I would say my experience has been that if the minimum you put in there is 1,000, let's say, and somebody is interested and they're qualified, but they feel like what they need is not going to be quite that, they'll provide that in another field. Like, they're stuck with the minimum that you have there, but then they're going to clarify, hey, by the way, I saw that, you know, the minimum in that drop down is 1,000. I mean, I'm hoping this is not going to be quite that much. And they'll just tell you.
Right.
And then for those who don't even want to bother telling you, I feel like their attraction to you was too flaky to begin with, because they weren't even willing to, you know, qualify it. Then,
yeah. And that's, you know, kind of that's where I'm on the edge, because I thought about putting it, but in the end I didn't, just because I wasn't sure if I was going to drive people away because they're, but again, sorry, I'm just kind of thinking about it in my head. So I don't want to drive them away, but I also don't want to waste my time if they're just looking for a $100 blog kind of thing. So,
yeah, and you're not trying to attract everybody. Okay, so keep reminding yourself of that. Yeah. Driving people away is a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying you couldn't have turned some of those into decent prospects and eventually some into clients, but think about the work involved to do that. If we were talking about a shortage of prospects, I can maybe understand that. But when there are, you know, millions of them out there, you're better off. It doesn't mean they're bad people. Like, right now, I'm looking for someone to help me with some stuff that, won't get into the details. I just don't have I hadn't budgeted for it. So now I got to pay for it kind of out of budget, out of pocket. And I know I'm probably not a great prospect for a lot of people, but I'm looking for someone who could do what I need relatively cheaply because I didn't account for it. You know, it doesn't make me a bad person. It's just my specific situation is such that, you know, I'm limited as to what I could pay.
Right. And I also think that it at least saves you from ending up in David's situation where, you know, you thought you had them and, or even they think that they're expecting one price and you're not really talking about it until it's a bit too late and you've already not wasted.
Absolutely. Time. Yeah. I will even say this. So if you think about it, this way, here's where I would want everyone to eventually grow into. I know this is going to sound like really scary, but as your business grows and you get better and more confident, I know that you'll be in a point where you will probably consider what I'm about to suggest. Getting to a point where at the end of the conversation, when you've had the money discussion, the way I described it earlier, you can just ask them flat out. And the reason you can ask them flat out is the way you set up the conversation when you first picked up the phone, right at the beginning of the call, is you let them know, look, here's what I ask. We're going to talk about what you need. I'm going to see if I can help you. And if I think I can, if I'm confident I can, I'm going to let you know. If I don't think I can, I'm going to try to point you in the right direction. But if I think I can, all I ask is that you tell me yes or no, you want to work with me. And that you don't tell me, let me think about it. No is perfectly fine. I want to give you full permission to tell me no. But I have to think about it, you know, it's going to waste a lot of our time, your time and my time. So, you know, can we agree on that? And I know maybe some of you right now are thinking, oh man, that's like really aggressive. You will get to a point in your business when you're going to be willing to do that, because you would be at a certain income level. You're going to be crystal clear on who you work with. You're going to have a healthy pipeline, and you can afford to ask that question and make that kind of request. of your prospects. And then that really solves the problem, you know, because at the end, it's not that they have to sign the contract, but they can say, it's okay. They say, yes, David, you know, I know you got to send me an exact quote, but, you know, if all checks out, if it's within that range and you can do what we talked about today, yeah, I want to work with you. That's a great place to be. Same thing with David. I just can't afford this. You force them to give you a decision, you know, at the end. It's not a high pressure thing. You just like, look, let's put it all out on the table and just be honest with me. So, I mean, did I just scare you to death right there? Did I just lose you?
No, I just Oren Cleff. I think that's the guy's name. He's very much like that. He's very in your face. And I'm not saying that obviously I'm going to be in your face, but it's just kind of funny where he's multi-million dollars and, you know, he's just kind of like, okay, yes or no, stop wasting my time. Kind of thing. So.
Yeah. But setting it up at the beginning, as opposed to at the end, okay, you got to give me an answer. If you've set the expectation, and by the way, you can do it in your own way, in your own style. It's not about, you got to be aggressive and all macho like. I think there's something to that. And I'm, by the way, in my coaching business, I'm getting to that point because, you know, I spend a lot of time with people, and you know, this is, I think one step in that direction is the where do you stand on a scale of 1 to 10? That is a baby step in that direction. And then I'm getting to the point where, right, it's like, look, man, here's what I ask of you. I'm going to tell you if I can help you. If I can't help you, I'll point you in the right direction. If I can help you, I'll let you know. But what I ask is, at the end, I'm going to give you all the information. A yes is great. A no is also great. Believe me, trust me, a no is great. But what I would ask is that you don't give me a maybe, or I have to think about it.
Well, I really like your advice that it's, I like the top 10, or sorry, that on a scale of 1 to 10, because that really does clarify it. I'm really, really quite happy about that.
Absolutely. And I think most people are very, like I said, my experience has been people are honest about it. You know what people don't like? They don't like to be pressured into yes. It's not that they don't want to be pressured into an answer. I think that's a misconception. At the end, think about situations where you've gone into knowing that, oh man, this is going to be like a high pressure thing. It's not, your fear is not that you have to make a decision. Your fear is that you're going to be pressured into a yes. Right? But if they tell you, look, a no is awesome, believe me, that's great. And then you feel safe, because you know that it's safe to just give them a flat out no, and they're not going to hound you.
Yeah.
Or try to, you know, okay, well, what, you know, what are you concerned about? You know?
And I really like the, in my game plan, you were talking about, you know, not everything is a sale. You're just happy to have a prospect, happy to discover things, happy to see whether it's a fit, as opposed to, okay, how do I turn this prospect into a client?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Thank
That's
you.
A important mindset shift. Oh, sure thing. Yeah. So just guys know that, look, it's, you work your way to that. You know, you work with I'm a big believer and you work with the confidence that you have right now. I'm never going to ask you to do something. It seems just completely crazy. I'm probably going to ask you to not, no, I know I'm going to ask you to do things that are outside of your comfort zone, but not so far out that you're going to say there's no way, because it's not going to be effective for you. And prospects are going to notice, they're going to catch on to the fact that you're nervous, that you don't believe it. And so you got to work with you can only work with what you've got right now. Eva says, I'm going to try that on my next prospecting call. Yeah, and just write your own version, like you said, your own version, and you can work your way up to that. I think it's really not so much the language there as much as it is the intention, right? The spirit behind it. So I don't know, just start thinking about that. I think it's just an interesting concept to play around with, and you'll get to a point, and you know what? The you know when the time is to use these ideas is when you're book solid. Because when you're book solid, guess what? You got nothing to lose. All right. Any other questions? Any other questions? I see an open floor right now. All right, I don't see anything else, so let's do this. I'm curious about two things. If you wouldn't mind going to the chat area and giving me one of your top takeaways from today's conversations. Type in a capital T for takeaway, and then I want to make sure you leave with at least one action item. You know, you probably have some notes, that's great, but I want you to circle something or highlight something. You might have several things, but I want you to give me one thing that you're going to commit to doing between now and our next call, okay? Type in capital A for action item, capital T for takeaway. Peter says big takeaway for him was the 1 to 10 scale. Yeah, I think it's an easy one to implement, isn't it? I mean, you can probably see yourself asking that. I know when I thought of it, I'm like, you know, that's an easy ask because it could be very low key. It's like, look, I'm not trying to sell you anything or convince. I'm just curious, where do you stand right now? And it's a multi-tiered question that you can ask that question. And based on the response, you can ask a follow-up question, right? So it feels very safe for you and for them. Leslie says, takeaway is ask prospects where they stand. Yeah, scale of 1 to 10. Michael, all this pre-qualification stuff about screening out cheap or non-viable prospects. Awesome. Great. Peter, top takeaway, stop gap. Yeah. Patricia, 1 to 10 scale. Man, that really struck a chord. I love it. Sandra also says scale. I do that in coaching. Yeah, perfect. Eva says schedule 10% for marketing. Yeah, the 10% rule. I think it's a really good rule of thumb. And again, if like 10% seems like, man, I'm just stretched so thin, even 10% is going to be tough. You know what? Start with 5. It's kind of like a savings plan, right? Like, oh, you should save 10% for retirement. Well, you've already been working on this budget. You're already really constrained. All right, fine. Most of us, you know what we do is, oh, well, I'm not going to save anything until I can afford the 10%. You know what? If you don't start, you're never going to be able to afford the 10%. Same thing here. Start with 1%. Can you save 1% of your income? Can you do 1% of your time and allocate that to marketing? You know, so find out where you could start and then build on that. Because once 1% or 5% becomes the new normal, then that's your new baseline. And then getting to 10% is not that far off. David says, takeaway for Eva, obviously the action item was to schedule 10% marketing. Yeah. David says, top takeaway, improving the qualifying process in action item, creating an improve intake form in new client interview form. Great. Eva's one takeaway for her, scale the qualifying prospects and getting an answer right away. Yeah. Patricia says, action item, ask marketing clients about reaching out to their clients about work. Yep, perfect. Leslie says, ask a company if they're interested in my skills as an engineering blog editor during the transition time. Yeah, there you go. Position it. Give them the idea. They may not have thought of it. You never know. Patricia's action item is 10% of my work week. I must have missed this in my game plan. I'm not sure if it was there. You know, that's not something I just tell everybody. It's just when they ask, or if I know they're having trouble fitting it in, then that's when I go ahead and introduce that idea. So yeah, I don't think you missed anything. Michael says, a takeaway, the stopgap idea, going to propose that to a prospect who wants a part-time writer to come into Seattle office a couple times a week. Michael's action item, continue warming up prospecting initial emails and follow-ups, get going with more LinkedIn 3-2-1. And Peter's action item, consistency with 3-2-1 and warm email prospecting. Good stuff, man. You're consistent in your execution. Good for you. And, you know, at least you're aware of what you need to address. So even if you haven't been as consistent, that's okay. Awareness is the first step to making that change. So Hey, great discussions today, guys. Really enjoyed our conversation. Obviously, we'll continue this as needed in the Facebook group. So if you forgot something or you have a follow-up question, you can always reach Susan and me there. Otherwise, we'll talk here in another couple of weeks. Have a great rest of the day, and we'll talk soon.